This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Whack 'em, and UK Rampages 91, 92, and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seen Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Nation, welcome to episode 5 of Seen Your Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, stick my hand into the damp cardboard box of quality and videos, pull one out, and then break it down to within, or very possibly beyond, an inch of its life. However, it is impossible to perform such an undertaking alone, especially this month, so joining me again today is my fellow special relation here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, and that is Mr. Ben Locke. Ben, I will ask you now, how are you?
I'm okay. I feel I should let the listeners know in advance. Just thank you, Rory, for making this video. Thank you so much.
I feel I should ask you in about an hour how you are then as well.
At the moment, we are all good.
Yes, because we've only watched it. We haven't had to talk about it yet, have we? This is where it really is going to come unstuck, I feel. So what have I chosen, dear listener, for the first time since episode 1? Well, Ben himself, because he watched this one before I did, everybody, but he went through it and he said to me, Rory, you owe me big time. So there's a possible clue. But I was there spinning through the network as I do the home video classic section, and I saw a thumbnail picture of Bobby Heenan and Mean Gene Okerlund. Not of them playing golf, and not of them in front of a map of Germany. Those will come. No, it was them in a studio with Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy flanking them. So I thought, oh, this looks an interesting one, and we're going back a little bit further in time, way out of the comfort zone. So I chose Villains of the Squared Circle. An appropriately named Colosseum video, as we will get to, albeit maybe not in the way they intended. Ben, before we get there, yes, sir, already after 2 minutes, I'm just putting it off. Pro wrestling, villain, bad guy, heel. What makes a good one for you? And don't say this thing.
No. I kind of subscribe to the Mick Foley theory. One who believes everything he's saying. Doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, as long as the heel believes what he's saying is right. Then I'm all down with that. I don't particularly have a favourite type of heel. You know, you've got your cowardly heel, you've got your strong heel that's suits turn face and all that. So I'm happy with any kind of heel, to be fair. I've always been more of a heel guy than a face guy, let's put it that way.
I thought you might be somehow. I was... this is no surprise, because you were on with me last month when we were looking at Hulk Hogan Real American, and you, and indeed I, said that the milk and cookies routine didn't really strike home with us. And we just like it rough and tumble, don't we?
Oh, like it rough and ready.
Once again, recording before the watershed, everybody. Yes, who was the first heel I started watching properly in 96? Who was Owen Hart, I suppose. Obvious answer, really.
So I was a bit before that. So I was like 92, 93. So I was Flair. WWF Flair was my first proper heel.
Yeah, see, I think I would have been if I started watching wrestling then, because Flair... We talked about this a lot when we looked at Smack and Whack'em, but Flair just seemed so out of place in the WWF, in a good way. Yeah, he was a completely believable heel. He was Slick Rick. And certainly since, I would say, National Expansion, they'd never had a character like that before.
Yeah, he was sort of the first one that sort of struck home with me. So I think I said it on the last tape or the first one I was on, you know, how Ultimate Warrior was always my guy. So yes. I liked Savage, but I was never like in love with him, you know what I mean? So Warrior, so I think 92 Flair was the first sort of heel that sort of struck a chord with me.
It was legit.
I think it was the whole out, you know, just to quote the guy, styling and profiling, the whole outfit, having Perfect and Heenan with him, that made him a big deal straight away in my eyes.
And always wearing the Nature Boy robe, despite, to the best of my knowledge, not being known once as the Nature Boy during his tenure there.
And you know what else I think it was as well? Because obviously, like, 92, I was like 11 years old, so... You know, Flair was quite adult, wasn't he, in the WWF, which was quite cartoony. So having this sort of realistic guy compared to, you know, an alligator, the alligator man and...
Paul Skinner.
You know, yeah, and I'm trying to think of some other cartoony people, and Repo Man. But you know what I mean? Like, even when they tried to go out adult with, like, people like IRS, you know, why would I care about a tax man? But Flair, you know, was a legitimate athlete.
Yeah, that's far too much good stuff now. Let's get to the bads. We talked about good heels. Let's get off on the wrong foot here. We need to get negative. Yeah. So just crash right into it, shall we? We can talk about heel Ric Flair another day on another podcast. There are many available here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. It's our job, really our first job, to talk about bad stuff. Now, we do rankings at the end. I don't want to spoil anything, but... Don't hold your breath at anything above the equivalent of 0 out of 10, okay? If we weren't marking these out of 10, then you might as well press stop now. But we're going to tell you why we give it the awards we give it best we can. Ben, shall we do it?
Let's do it, man.
Hello again. I'm Mean Gene Okerlund on behalf of the World Wrestling Federation and Coliseum Video, the producers of the official World Wrestling Federation home video series. Now, in the past, we brought you a number of video cassettes dealing with the very specific aspects of professional wrestling, like the WWF's most unusual matches, bloopers, bleeps, and body slams, a history of the tag team champions, and wrestling's amazing managers. But today, in response to the thousands and thousands of fan requests, we're putting together a program which focuses on, quote, the bad guys, the rule benders and the rule breakers, men who literally stop at nothing to get what they want, and we call it Villains of the Squared Circle.
We get a Star Wars style intro to kick us off, and I wonder if that music is dubbed in. It sounds like library music to me, giving us an intro to this pro wrestling thing. We get tons of clips here, including a cut from Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask to Uncle Elmer, which is a fair transition, no? After a shot of Hulkamania beginning, you know the one, here is Gene from a rather dilapidated event centre who runs through some of the Coliseum videos already released by this point, and yes, I will get to them, before telling us this tape is the result of thousands and thousands of fan requests. The bad guys, the rule breakers, and the rule benders. Gene states that he could not be objective through an hour of pure evil, and having seen this, I don't think I can be either. So, we need some guest hosts, and Bobby Heenan turns up. And King Kong Bundy. And John Studd. The latter tells us he is no villain, just a very aggressive wrestler, and Bundy has not done a questionable thing in his life. Heenan reacts to the W word in the only way he can, then laughs at some of the acts of heenosity we are about to see. Look, I've been watching a lot of July 2000 WWF. I'm allowed to say heenosity. I so totally, totally am. See, stop talking, Rory. Stop talking about good and laudable stuff. It's the Villains of the Squared Circle video. It sucks. So, this will help. We fast cut to our first match. Jake versus Scott McGee from MSG in 1985, I believe. Jake starts off like a house on fire as we eventually get to hear from our commentary team for this one, Gorilla and Alfred. Backbreaker and elbow to the back, and that sounds like Ernie Ladd. They rabbit on about Rocker for a while as Jake drops a roll-up attempt. He gets suplexed and backdropped and gut-wrenched, and this fellow seems rather spry. We get the international and a two count from a leg drop attempt. Scott grabs his leg so the snake can't reach for the snake. An external occipital protuberance from Gorilla. That's the mention we wanted. This tape can now cannot be a 0 out of 10, whatever else happens. Short arm clothesline puts Jake back on top, and then he blocks an O'Connor roll. And my word, did that DDT come out of nowhere or what? I was not set for that. The three count is academic, and here comes the snake. They are all Damien, as far as I'm concerned. Well, Gorilla, that's helpful. And you know where the snake ends up. McGee is out of it, and thankfully, he doesn't react in the same way that George Wells would go on to. Damien slivers around for a while as Gorilla suggests he might be after Alfred. He then wraps it around McGee, and why is this segment still going on? I'll repeat that for about 30 more seconds until we do cut to our second match. So Ben, not too many to talk about on this show, but a complete contest on here from bell to bell. Try to bring it's this slim pickings. This could be the only real chance to really get your teeth sucked into a proper match. So tell us about that and the fact that Bobby Heenan was our supposed guest host, but we barely hear from him all night.
Well, you know what? He's only the best colour commentator in the history of the business. Why would you want to hear from him? Yeah, the actual match itself, it's fine. It's basic. I would imagine that it's either first or second on the bill at MSG to get the crowd warmed up. Damien's a big boy, isn't he? He's not messing around with that snake. But no, it was a really good match. Really happy to see the short arm clothesline. That might be my favourite setup for a finishing move. Just thinking out loud, and there's not too many others I can think of that I love more than the short arm clothesline. And the DDT was a beast, of course.
DDT was a killer, wasn't it? He fucking nailed that thing.
Yeah,
McGee just went splat on that one.
That's one of the best things about that Jake DVD is when he actually reveals the DDT came out just because I slipped over.
It's just one of the greatest moves. And now it's become a transitional move. In fact, barely even that.
Yeah.
Just when he hits the DDT, you know it's over. I mean, I typed up the finish before the three count was even administered, and I was very happy with that. I wasn't going to be proved wrong. This match was actually okay, so we really should fill our boots on this one best we can.
Yeah.
I don't know what ever really happened to Scott McGee. He looked a bit mid-80s production line, but I thought he held his own in this one.
I'm right in thinking he was around for a couple of years, wasn't he?
Very possibly.
I mean, like we said on the last podcast, sort of 80s, mid-80s is not my forte, but he's a name I've seen and heard a few times, is old McGee.
Not quite Tom McGee, though, but then who is Tom McGee?
Well,
is Tom McGee even Tom McGee? Name is spelled slightly differently as well, of course.
The legend would say different.
That's a good piece on the network about the Tom McGee Bret Hart match, if you haven't seen it, by the way. Do check it out. Tom McGee seems like a perfectly nice fella as well. Anyway.
He does.
He's not on here. Nor is Scott McGee after this. And to set the tone for the remaining hour, Ben, other than putting the snake on Scott McGee, which he does a few times and he lets it slither around him. Who knows where it went? Who knows where it had been beforehand either? Did Jake do anything particularly villainous here? And yes, that is a rhetorical question.
Not really, no. I mean, we'll go into it in a bit more, in lots more detail, but they could have done, even for 986, they could have done so much more with this tape.
That's, again, spoiler alert, it doesn't really adhere to its title very much. It's a bit of a hodgepodge compilation, really.
You know, the cynic in me would say it's a money-grabbing concept, but that's just the cynic in me coming out.
Well, they got $9.99 out of me for it.
Well,
34 years after the fact.
Wait, you were getting the network just for this.
I signed up for the network on the very first day it became available here in the UK in January 2015. All the content, all the pay-per-views. Yeah, but they didn't have Villains of the Squared Circle on there. I was just, my finger was hovering over the unsubscribe button and then they hauled me back in 2 years ago.
When your first pay-per-view is Royal Rumble 2015 and you're still around 5 years later, you can put up with something like this for a bit.
Yeah, Royal Rumble 2015 is a decent tie-in to this tape quality-wise, but it did have a great three-way match though.
Yeah.
That was excellent. Stop it, Ben. Stop bringing up excellent stuff.
Sorry.
Got to be in the mood for this sort of thing. We need to bury this fucker. No sympathy. Okay.
Nobody else is ever going to watch it ever again.
Wipe those tears away. Scowl. Come on, Ben Lock Angry Face. I know you can do it. I've seen it. Maybe unintentionally, but I've seen it. You can do it.
Angry Ben does make an appearance every now and again.
Oh, yes. And I hope he appears here, because our second match, we go to the Shea Stadium show from 1980, which is a decent coup for this tape, I must say, for Pat Patterson versus Tor Kamata. A bit of podcast gimmick infringement here, Ben. What's your favourite Tor Kamata match?
This one.
I love you for that. We join in progress with Gorilla giving us a voiceover commentary. Okay, Ben, quiz question. What is the proper name in the biz for that sort of commentary where you do a voiceover, not in the arena? You do it afterwards in post-production. What is the proper name for that, for 5 points?
I don't know. I want to say it's something like an overdub or something like that.
It is an overdub, but there is a proper biz name for it.
Go on, give me the proper beer's name.
It's called an off tube.
Oh.
Off tube. There you are. But you still beat me in body press your luck, though, so. I'm going to keep chipping away.
Educational, this show.
Every day is a school day. Gorilla gives us an off tube commentary. Well, they sadly did not go back and redo this comment, where Tor Kamata literally did a Pearl Harbor job on Pat Patterson. There's more. Pat still has his ring jacket on, then takes a kick from the big Jap with the martial arts. He misses a splash. Now up goes Pat, the bombs away. Close but no cigar. We learn that Tor is, of course, a very devious individual. Oh my God. We just need inscrutable for the full set. Pat holds him in the corner for a while, but Tor is able to grab a year's supply of salt. But Pat ducks, and the ref, dear old Dick Kroll, eats it. And that's a DQ, despite him counting a pinfall attempts afterwards. Okay. There goes the positivity, eh, Ben?
I'm glad that you mentioned the slight tones of racism coming out of Gorilla's mouth. I got that. Has there been any other kind of Japanese wrestler other than a devious one?
Devious. They have to be, don't they?
They have to, even a face, like, look at Tajiri, even look at Kairi Sane. They have to be some sort of deviousness there.
Or just outright ninjas.
I mean, you know, it's 2020. Don't get me started, Rory, on that.
Back to the match, the 1.5 minutes we did get. 1.5 minutes too many. Again, where was the heel? Throwing salt.
Yeah, that's it.
6,000 years after the fact, although they do it a lot more later than 1980. Not villainous. It's not fucking villainous.
Just read your description, boys. You're not following that. You're not following it.
So in that respect, we are 0-2. I'm going to lose count very quick. It's going to be like Goldberg's early streak. I'm going to lose count very early.
I feel like we're almost going to be like, you know, like those old Scott Keith Coliseum reviews. We're going to be like 0-11 in a bit.
This is where we're going. It's like nothing to talk about that match whatsoever. Although, maybe I'd like to check out the whole Shea Stadium show one day.
I would like to, because I've never seen bits and pieces of it, but I've never seen the full thing.
Make a note for special relations, Mr. Locke. Make a note. I'm sure it's out there.
Once we've got past Battle Bowl 93, we'll...
Should I never mention that now? Now we go back even further to 1973, where Pedro Morales is world champion. He is defending against the master of the foreign object, JT's favourite and mine, George Steele. Our voiceover team say he is no longer effective as he just spends his time chasing after women. Well, that was true in 1986. Then we cut to our original commentator, one Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Steele has some sort of foreign object, but he grinds into Pedro's face, then just hangs about in the corner for a very, very long time. Pedro meets him with punches that rock the MSG crowd, it must be said. As is customary for this era, I believe, Vince doesn't actually say very much on commentary. And then from there, notwithstanding, Pedro holds Steele in the corner as we clip out to what I presume is a lot later in this one. Steele still has whatever the object is and nails Pedro with it. Thank God for the fucking clip. Seeing the picture in this one, object nailing Pedro, walking around the corner for ages. Then a forehead ram to the turnbuckle. And another. Why is the ref dressed like an accountant, I ask. Pedro fights off from the apron, then gets off his own turnbuckle headshots. Oh, now I get it. Flash bulbs go off, but very little else does. More punches from Pedro, and the ref just waves it off. And that's our second what the bloody hell finish was that finish in succession. I suppose it was a mercy killing, though. We get some weak brawling after the bell, and somehow Steel is wide open. He just hops around a bit, yes, that's really what he does, before toppling out of the ring. That was, of course, horrendous. But again, I can't completely destroy the thing, because Vince McMahon did call the MSG attendees this capacity crowd. Ben, I am, it's another Vinceism. I am not perhaps sensing victory with this tape so far.
No, but I'm very pleased that you managed to get it from there in.
Notwithstanding.
You didn't get a water manoeuvre, but you pretty much hit the rest of the Vince bingo, which I'm really happy about. So if the mid 1980s isn't my forte, then 73-74 certainly isn't. It was dull, it was plodding, it was boring. You know, Steel even then was terrible.
I feel we need somebody like Kelly Nelson on these shows with us. He could see the good in this, I reckon.
Yeah.
This ain't my jar of ale, I have to say.
Yeah, this isn't my jam and all that.
it's got plenty of microbes on the top where the head should be. I just can't with this sort of thing, quite frankly. Pedro was champion, very popular with MSG, which considering who the other champion was around this time, but long before and after, I get it. He was very over. He did quite well in the GWE list a few years ago, but I would need a lot of convincing. And I would also need a lot of time to sit down to be convinced. And I don't just have it, or I just don't have it. See, power of speech even goes. I'm only three matches in. And yet George Steele, fucking dreadful.
Just to give everybody a slight insight into the way I do things. So I usually watch things twice, like, you know, once all the way through, twice, you know, so I can make my notes.
With this, I
watched it the once and that was enough.
Very much enough. All I will say about George Steele, 1986 George Steele, very much was 1973 George Steele. So at least have familiarity going for it there.
Yeah, he's a guy much like, let's pick somebody like a Jim Duggan who has, stayed in his lane. Let's put it that way. Let's try and be nice.
Ever the diplomat. Again, what was heelish about this one? Other than George Steele's existence, was there anything here that got under your skin?
Not especially. The match got under my skin.
Oh, there you go then. Felt very tame even for what I suppose 1973 would have been. Oh, goodness me. It's just a comp tape. Fast cut to another lesson in foreign objects from Ernie Ladd. He must face Andre here at MSG. Bobby tells us that the suspicious thumb is purely down to his NFL injury. Back to Vince on commentary and those Andre headbutts. And you know what? I'm not tired of them yet. Ernie, though, goes to the controversial right thumb to regain some control, but does remember to sell the head. Andre gets tied up in the ropes, ding, as Ladd stomps away, and yet more punches until Andre blocks and wallops Ernie with a shot. He really did bloody cream him there, it must be said. Very low Irish whip and a back body drop, but the locomotive misses the splash. And Ernie has had enough of that and just wanders to the back. That's it. That's your lot. But he does still sell the head. I'll give him that. Ben?
So this out of the four, I think we've got 70s matches. This is a match I'd like to see a bit more of. Andre, actually, you can tell, you know, obviously because we're used to that sort of slow lumbering giant of the 90s. He could move quite a bit, couldn't he, back then? I know that's a particular hot take, but yeah, he was quite mobile
in this match. He was
quite a nimble, mobile giant in the 70s, and Ernie Ladd was okay as well. Yet again, there was nothing particularly heelish going on, but I wouldn't have minded seeing a proper match between these two.
Ernie just walked to the back. I would have used his thumb and walked to the back.
That thumb is a killer, though.
A charge sheet as long as your arm. Depends where he puts it, I suppose.
Well, wow, there's an image, kids.
Especially with Andre. Now who's mobile? More Andre coming up. So especially after that interjection, let's move on. Back to June 1973, the same card as our Pedro versus Steel match a little earlier. For the one Ben Locke has really been waiting for. It's time for Captain Juan Barno to lace up the boots.
Why?
The silence speaks volumes. Versus one Gorilla. I didn't pick the matches. I only picked the video. I only picked this one out of the 66 remaining. Captain Lou is versus one Gorilla Monsoon. Okay, I'm in for this one. Ben, we are both from the UK, of course. I'm sure most of our listeners here are from across the pond. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. These are mentioned twice by our roving reporters, who we don't hear enough from. Jelly Rolls. A match between two big old jelly rolls, says King Kong Bundy on this one. Now, jelly for us over here, what is, we call it jam, I believe.
Oh, yes, that's jam,
literally translated, this would be a jam roll. But I don't think, maybe a jam roly-poly.
Ooh, oh, okay. I haven't had a jam roly-poly in ages.
Roly-poly and ice cream, baby.
Oh!
Sorry, could look it up, but the personal touch. Please, somebody across the water, let us know what a jelly roll actually is.
I think I might have an idea.
Oh, go on.
Well, I'm thinking bellies. I'm thinking, like, you know, when the belly moves like jelly, because they're two big lads, aren't they? So we're not talking like bodybuilder types here, are we?
Not indeed.
So that would be my guess. Anyway, it's not a particularly educated guess. I'm just going by the name.
Send your letters too. Let's get to the match. Plenty of stalling, of course. I've seen enough of that on this tape already. Against the popular Gorilla Monsoon, as he is called by our ring announcer. Plenty of stalling from Lou. I've already said that. And a rake in the eye, of course, I have. A rake in the eyes when Gorilla tries his luck. Repeat this about 600 times. Give or take the occasional kick, that is the match for the next far too many minutes. There's a nice future echo when Gorilla himself does an eye rake and Vince, on commentary, says, turnabout is fair play. Make a note. And a nice overhand chop by Monsoon too. He really lets Albano have it, who then goes right over the top and just wanders to the back. Just like in the last match. That was actually close to being semi-demi, vaguely half watchable, but close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
We don't class that.
I'm glad he retired, I can tell you that.
Right. To go back, I think I found a little bit more about jelly rolls.
Oh god, hit me.
Well, it's a bar in Disney World. Looking at the website.
A bar.
Have they got a reputation for being serial drinkers, these two?
They were wrestlers in the 70s, so I'm going to say yes on that one.
Yes.
We all know about Gorilla and the Joy Juice. If Jesse was here, we'd hear about that.
Yeah, so, like, everything is for jelly rolls in Orlando. So that's the information I'm getting off Google. So as you can tell, I was really into the match, so I'm looking at Google facts. So Captain Lou is as good a wrestler as he is a manager. There, that's my whole statement on the match.
Oh, that's gone right up my spine, that has been.
Sorry, Roy. Gorilla's okay, though.
Yeah, there was plenty of Gorilla to go round, but I'll tell you what, he was giving it some here.
When
he had the opportunity to, when Lou just wasn't stalling.
Yeah, Gorilla could go. Lou Albano can go fuck off.
Hey! I did like the Gorilla chops, which we would see 23 years later.
Yes.
Loading their way into the chest of Vader, so. It's good to see them in a match context.
And also when he loaded it into Muhammad Ali.
Indeed. That's one for a special too, I reckon.
Yes.
So many ideas, so little time.
It's good. I'm making a note. I'm making a note of all these ideas.
Sure. So for this one, the heel count, just Captain Lou Albano existing. So this one gets a tick then. There was heeldom in this match.
He's a villain of the square circle as much as you want to boo him and get rid of him.
Okay, we can buzz Utz Creek through this one very quickly. Stan Stasiak is up now, teaming with Blackjack Lanza versus Andre and Chief J Strongbow. He can be counted on for scratching and gouging, saith Gene, as we will see some of here. But first, Chief J arm drags him around a bit. I never recall J looking this much like Ilya Nastasi before, but there you go. Stan is now the aggressor. Ah, Vince, all the classics. And then they wait for Ebba to do a punch off the rope spot, to the point Stan just throws a random punch instead, and that's all we get. Yes, we cut away from the match right there. No scratching, no gouging, no anything. No anything for Ben either, and I don't blame you.
Sorry, I had my mic muted. I do apologise.
What was the point in that?
There wasn't really, was there? So
30 seconds mid-match, they cut away.
So, you know, the only interesting thing I can say about Stan Stasiak is he's Sean Stasiak's dad, and that's not particularly interesting. But, yeah, it was just there, wasn't it? You know, I mean, there's plenty of Andre on this stage, so if you're an Andre fan, you know, you fill your boots, but for the rest of us, it's not enough, no.
I've seen far too much of Sean Stasiak in one of my other podcast ventures. The perfect event on doing that stuff in WCW 20 years ago right now.
Oof, blimey. Oh, I was going to say, when he's read the thrillers, yes.
At least I've mentioned something bad. Keep me on the straight and narrow. Although I am heading towards Hemlock territory at the moment, and I've just seen my notes, there's still a long way to go. But now it's a retrospective of Don Morocco. He gives Gene the creeps. Heenan, though, marks him down as spiritual. We get a few seconds of him v. Pedro at MSG, followed by a little more against SD Jones, so you know Scott approves. Vince and Pat on the call here, so I think this is from Championship Wrestling. Vinny suggests SD could be number one contender, so you know Scott approves, as he gets up a sunset flip for two, then a lengthy side headlock. But Don works that into a neckbreaker. Hey, that was all right. He misses a Bader bomb, he's doing well today, then is punished with another lengthy side headlock. SD then goes for a crossbody, but Don catches him into a sort of power slam for a quick win. There was no cheating there whatsoever, by the way, so I think we're 0-500 at the moment. If sprint isn't a contradiction in terms.
I did make the note that the commentators both mentioned how slow and deliberate the pace was.
A slow sprint.
I mean, when Don Morocco is sort of a step up from what you've been watching so far, that's kind of a bad sign, isn't it? You know, there's a seeming hot take for you again.
On our chat, you messaged me to say, oh, and now there's a Don Morocco retrospective.
I think I might have said, I mean, I know we're only about halfway through. I think I might have said that this is actually the worst of anything I've ever watched. Never, not just wrestling.
And given the things that have passed by your cathode ray, Mr. Locke, that covers a lot of ground.
I know. I'm becoming sort of the king of, like, watching shit, basically.
We've got Ricky Steamboat in a few seconds.
Yeah, we have.
For a few seconds, but in a few seconds. Yeah, a bit more Morocco I missed. Sorry. Oh, sorry.
Go.
A clip from TNT of the Don. We are on the dark side. We control the dark side. VKM says the only way is down. But when it comes to talent, greatness, and magnificence, the Don stands for every word of that. And as for Steamboat, I got some fat broads that make your ladies look sick, and we are having one heck of a time. I like that.
Party.
Take that, Family Man Steamboat.
I mean, can we just take a minute just to moan about the tape and just say, so we've got Morocco, and we've got Fuji on TNT, but we haven't got Fuji Vice.
Oh, well, that would have no place on this tape, though.
No. That would score it from a, like, whatever minus score I'm going to give it to to a 5 or something just for that one segment.
I'm sure it's out there. So now we do go to Steamboat versus Mr. Fuji. We join with Rick going up for a crossbody and getting only a 2. Bruno on commentary here, so I hope somebody's conditioning gets praised.
Sorry.
Good conditioning, Vince. And Ben, you'll like this one. I didn't mention it earlier because I wanted to let the man himself come in with it. Vince gives us a look at that manoeuvre. The Steamboat works Fuji into a package for a sensational victory. He celebrated, but Don belted him in the back with a chair. Yes, an actual villainous act on this tape. It only took 41 minutes and 4 seconds. Yes, I counted. I should say it was a proper wooden living room chair too, and it broke right against Steamboat's back. Villainy. proper fucking chair.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that because I got that in my notes. I was like, it's a proper chair, and it was a proper chair shot. He didn't go like soft on him, it was just full on. Because obviously, the way I don't know where it was set that show, but there was no like rampway, there was no entranceway. He literally came from the changing room, didn't he? And then just came out and just whacked him.
It was out of a shot.
Yeah, it was. It's the best thing so far.
The sort of thing I would expect from a bad guy, rule breaker, and rule bender. Mm. Sadly, it's in very short supply on this tape. But we do get somebody who's a dab hand at that sort of thing, as he would show in 1991 with wooden chairs as well. And that is Rowdy Roddy Piper. Now, I will in the future have other opportunities to talk about the Rowdy one. His VHS is there in the home video classic section, and I will get to it probably very soon, the way things are going, to try to tip the scales a little bit. So I'm going to bash through these very quickly. Most of these are edited as it is. You'll hear about them in full in future on Senior Video. But I did want to mention these because I want to give Ben a chance to talk about Piper. So we get a bit of Piper snooker. We get dear old Frankie Williams getting it. Columbus, Ohio. We get Captain Lou being made mincemeat out of, so Ben must have liked that one, despite being told to buzz off. Where's your decorum, Piper? And a backstage scrap with Mr. T. Plenty of clips from him in the ring, as the heels in the studio rightly call him a hero. Then we get some clips from a match against Snooker, refereed by Lou Thesz. Piper uses his belt to beat on his adversary and to choke him. We don't see the end, though, as we switch to a little bit of him teaming with Bob Orton versus Snooker and Tonga Kid. And that's our lot. Ben, this left me wanting more. Luckily, I know I'm going to get it in the future, but I'm going to let you fill your boots on Piper. You might not get another chance. Probably because you'll never want to speak to me again after we do finish this show.
Yes, you do owe me big for this. I'm going to keep saying that to you.
It's been a good nine months.
But, oh no, Piper's fantastic. Bow out now.
The floor is yours. Make it good.
Piper's fantastic. I've said it before, with me being a sort of child of the 90s, the Piper we got to see was sort of the baby face who took no shit. This was sort of like I said before, this is like the tough heel, isn't it? He does the heelish acts, but he can back it up, and that's what I love about it. And like I say, he gets all the big hits in here, the coconut shot, the TNT performance. I can't even remember the line. I'll grab that. And that's it. Yeah, just when you think the answers, I change the questions. You get it all, but it's only in clip form. Like as long as Ruddy was describing it, is as long as it's on this tape. It's about what, 2 minutes, and that's being generous.
That's all we get. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's great because it does hit the sort of big points of Piper's verbal attacks and verbal assaults on people, but like I say, we can go in the ring as well. He is one of the greatest heels of all time, I think.
I'm glad he got a moment, and I do mean a moment, to shine on this tape, but he will be dealt with elsewhere on the Senior Video.
Exactly. I think there is one, isn't there, out there?
There is. Gene actually even mentions it when he's leading into this segment.
Ah.
And the very first thing I did, I paused, went back to Home Video Classics, scroll, and there it was. So so more on Piper on a future episode, but just to say, saves it for being a complete washout for the 1 hour 10 minutes we get here.
Yeah. Yeah, that 2 minutes and then what's coming next sort of save this tape from being an absolute dud.
Well, you say that, but next up is indeed Randy Savage versus Tito Santana for the latter's IC title. My notes say, and do we ever need this right now? My next line, so of course, we only get the bloody finish, thanks a fucking bunch. Yet we just get the famous finish, not the match. It's on the Savage set. Well, it's on the Savage DVD set, of course. The one presented by Matt Stryker and... Who's it? Matt Stryker and...
Maria, isn't it?
Yes, Maria. I want to sing Melina for some reason. It might just well have been. Yeah.
The 2008 version of Savage and Liz, of course.
You can't even see the join, can you? That match is on there, I believe, and it is on the Macho Madness, I think is the name of the tape. Anyway, I'll get to it. But we only get the finish here, so bollocks. But some good stuff to talk about. I do like that, A, Savage actually misses with the steel shot before he gets suplexed back in. B, the huge pop when the three count goes down. Nicely played, Boston. And C, the quick roll out of the ring of the weapon out of the ref's sight. Ben, we only get the finish, so we can only talk about the finish, but that pop was good to hear, wasn't it?
Yeah, that Boston crowd, they knew what side their bread was buttered on. God bless them.
I love me some Tito, but come on. 1986, Savage.
It was a bit of a changing of the guard match, wasn't it? That technical wrestling side of things, Hulkamania sort of ushered that out of the main event scene. This was ushering it out of the mid card for a bit until everybody realized that Savage could also go in the ring.
Good to see Savage. They could have done a segment on him at this point, could they not?
Yeah.
Because he was IC champion when the tape was released. It would be the opportunity to do so. They had a year's worth of clips they could have used.
It's a big issue I have with the tape in general. You know, it's a good idea for a tape, but the execution is all wrong.
It is.
Like, clip the 70s stuff, and then you could, you know, you don't have to go, you know, tally-ho on Savage and Pipe because they're going to get their own sets, but you could give them, say, 5 minutes.
You can, but we need to fill in. We've only got an hour and 10 minutes. We need to use the time for a full match we're about to get now, unedited. Iron Sheik versus third-rate Slaughter knockoff Corporal Kirshner.
Great value, Sergeant Slaughter.
Savage, just in the corner, mate. You know, lucky you've had 30 seconds. Let the real stars of 1986 come through.
I feel blessed.
This one is from MSG, so probably reviewed elsewhere on the network. The Place to Be Nation network, that is. And I believe it comes from a few weeks after WrestleMania 2. Play-by-play. Great. Clothesline by the Iron One, and then he chokes him out with the apron, as I've written here. Okay. Bell rings now as we get a backdrop, and the bell rings again for some reason. Sheiky Baby makes rude gestures before hitting a kick, but the corporal hops over him and body slams him down. He risks a DQ by dragging his legs to the ring post, but just grinds on them instead. He misses a dropkick and looks like a right goit doing it, and now the Iron Sheik goes to town. Nice gut wrench scores a two, then the corp puts his head down early and looks like a right goit doing it. Do you get the picture? He really is a fucking terrible worker. Abdominal stretch by Shaky Baby, which gets hip tossed out of, but CK misses an elbow. Sunset Flip gets a one count only, but his feet are all over the shop, and even the commentary team get on his case there. We go outside and Volkov goes after the corp with the cane. And the ref didn't see it, so he counts instead, and the Iron Sheik wins by count out. They then do a number on the corporal, but he levels up the odds with a chair. Yeah, I should have edited my notes before doing this show. I think third-rate Slaughter knockoff was being a bit kind there, wasn't it, Ben? Not really fitting with this tape. Too positive.
Far too positive. Yeah. Great value, Slaughter is the way to go.
Gosh, that was just awful, wasn't he?
He was so bad. Woe betide Vince to carry a grudge against somebody, but maybe just give the military thing a rest for a bit.
They hold off on it for about 4 more years after this, and it comes back and how.
Yeah. It's good then.
Us listeners to the mothership will definitely know where we are right now.
Oh, yes.
But at least Sheik did something kind of...
Well, yes, Sheik...
Almost literally.
Sheik and Volkov both, you know, were quite... Particularly villainous at the end of the match, I thought.
I could have used the Sheik promo here. This tape was, well, it was missing a lot of things, but a Gene Mean could have helped put it on. So.
And a Hapui.
Hapui. Fuck.
Okay, rat number one. Rat number one.
Okay, that would work. We're okay with that. Fuck. We're about 30 years too early for. I might have reacted in a similar way after seeing that match, however, so not. Maybe not. So now it's manager of the year time, and we cut to this one rather awkwardly. Bobby is the winner, but Hillbilly Jim hasn't yet cast his vote. Oh no, Hillbilly Jim hasn't cast his vote. He, of course,
it's like Eurovision or something. It's like Eurovision or something.
Null foi. Hillbilly Jim gets on his Ben Lock by picking Captain Lou as manager of the year. It's nothing you wouldn't have done. Heenan takes umbrage to this, and rightly so. You've already given him the trophy. Voting's over. The shutters have come down on his fingers. Heenan entirely correctly nails Jim with the trophy. Then Stud and Bundy do the rest of the dirty work for him, including an assisted splash. I've got a soft spot for Hillbilly Jim, but he was in the wrong here.
Wrong place, wrong time, wrong attitude, wrong question.
Don't go messing with the Mokrasoy. That's the best I can do in the time.
Bobby doing a number on the big, fat, sweaty, sloppy pig is, you know... That's again, that is a point right there, I would say. I'm glad you mentioned the assisted splash, because I got that in my notes. That was a great... Bobby just puts everything into that as his splash. It's like watching one of them guys in like the bobsleigh when they're running down the track the way he pushes off Bundy.
And you said at the top of the show that Heel has to believe he's right. Here, Bobby fucking was right.
Yeah.
What the award?
Bobby knows he's right. Bobby knows he's in the right. Going back to what we said last month as well about Hogan, that's one of the reasons I didn't like Hogan as well, because he was always wrong.
Always wrong.
Well, not always. Well, all right, always wrong is a bit of a generalization, but you know what I mean.
So, he's been wrong since 2007. I think that's fair to say.
Yes. But, you know, like you say, like Bobby believed he was right. You know, Bundy and Stud believed they were right, and this was genuinely villainous, and actually was one of the very few things on this tape I actually enjoyed.
Lou Albano is always wrong.
Yes.
I don't care when he's Super Mario-ing it up. I don't care when he's talking about the realities of the business. He's always wrong.
Yeah. Even when he's right, he's wrong.
Even when he's right, he's wrong. I am right in saying there are only three segments left.
We've done it nearly.
You haven't started building the Rory-sized voodoo doll yet. Well, I believe you have. Well, I don't believe you have. Yeah, I do believe you have. It's a good thing you're not on video chat.
we'll talk about that at the end.
Sure we will. What have we got next up? It's Big John Studd versus Andre again. This is not the WrestleMania 1 match. This one comes from Maple Leaf Gardens, interestingly. We join with a Studd elbow and Heenan bringing in a pair of scissors. Andre manages to block them this time and bites away on Studd. Bobby takes a shot and, of course, sells it brilliantly. Big John gets slammed and now Andre has the scissors. Bundy, though, stops it and Andre eats no fewer than three splashes. Various low-end faces, including Cousin Junior, then see the bad guys off. Andre wins by DQ, and a shout-out to the guy in the crowd wearing a Spain 1982 World Cup t-shirt. Did you notice that?
I did.
Yeah, I thought you might. the match. Odd placement on this tape, given with what we get later. Andre's got very short hair here.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We'll pick up on that in a bit. So I'm glad you did mention that the place taping was a bit out of sync.
But nice angle here, I thought. Nice enough.
Yeah. It was a good It was like we're saying, until about sort of 87, 88, when he slowed down a bit, Andre, you know, could go and, you know, kept up his end of the bargain, I thought.
It was fine. One of those where joining it late probably helped the viewing experience, yeah. But the splashes at the end, I felt them.
Yeah.
You and know, we got, what? You know, they can't have all the fun on the mothership. We got ourselves a bit of cousin chew.
Well, it was definitely one of those I felt where it was better to get just 2 minutes of action and then the finish, because I get the feeling this would have been about 10 minutes in real life.
this is another problem with the tape. If they had just shown more angles like this, because they were out there at this time.
Definitely.
I think it would have improved. And they learned their lesson too late, because our penultimate segment is Bundy versus Hogan from Saturday night's main event. Should be very familiar to all of you. Morocco holds Hulkster down as King Kong Bundy gives him the avalanche three times and says, "There's your champion." Splashes are then hit for bad measure. A very simple angle, Ben, but this is one we talk about 34 years on for good reason.
Exactly. It's one of those sort of you can almost shut your eyes and just you memorized it because it was that good. More great assisted splashes by both Morocco and Heenan. You know, everybody in there was doing their all and giving it. And yeah, it's just tremendous. It's great.
Really great angle. Made Bundy a worthy contender, just like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? You know, I'm going to say it. I don't mind their WrestleMania too much. I think it's all right.
No, I don't. I don't. You know, it's passable. It's, yeah, what are you going to say about 1.5, 2 stars?
I'd say that's about fair, yeah.
It'll do. It's because it's not great and there's a big pile of shite beforehand that, you know, puts
it. I'm not making a case for much of WrestleMania 2, everybody. Don't worry. I haven't done one of your time.
We haven't gone that crazy, guys. Don't worry.
Easily a bottom 5 Mania, but that main event, it's okay.
that's another opinion for another pod or another call.
Most definitely. So let's close out. Yes, let's close out with Andre and SD versus Stud and Ken Patera. Our villainous heroes take great pleasure in seeing this again. Stud calls him Andrea, and he says that Patera is currently not with us, which is a very diplomatic way to put it. I'm reminded I'm going to have to do the Ken Patera story VHS at some point. What have I done?
I will be saying no to that one.
Might have no choice. Everybody else has already said no to it. I might well be flying solo on that one. We cut straight to the Giant getting a beating, and he has a lot more hair than earlier. Yes, this is the haircut angle where Andre is raped of his dignity. This is where they should show stuff in the right fucking order. Stud then waves Andre's hair at the camera as we close, and the heels just do their stuff on poor old Andre. I still think this one holds up, but you know what, Ben? Not just in the wrong order. I think they should have started the tape with this. Instead, we really do end as very quickly afterwards as Vince gets in right at his dignity once more do the credits roll.
Yeah, not only is it in the wrong order, but it's dealing with a match stipulation where that is very obvious as well. You know, sometimes you can get away with putting things in the wrong order. Not in a hair match. Not with hair involved, you can't. You know, he goes from having the big Andre early 80s fro to his WrestleMania 3 haircut. And it's like, what, no. Oh, no, sorry, the other way around. Sorry, the WrestleMania 3 haircut to the fro. It's like, yes. That's not going to grow back that quickly.
I could have tried to superimpose a fro on him for the previous match, but I'm not sure that the boys in the back had the abilities to make that look convincing in 1986.
I don't think special effects have got that far yet.
We're in 2020 and they can't really do a CGI eyeball either. So
yeah, we're doing all this moaning now. We're only days removed from an eye match.
Wait till we look at that one again on the Villains of the Squared Circle 2, whatever we're watching our things on in 2054.
WWE, the Corona months.
And you're going to be around for that. Again, everyone else has already said no to that.
Damn.
Very comfortable. Yeah. another very famous angle here, and famous for good reason. Andre sells it so well. And he as does. Much as I bagged on Vince there for raped him his dignity, A, I've said it three times, and B, he and Andre sell this. He's only having a haircut, for goodness sake. I mean, let's face it, a month ago, we're champing at the bit all to get haircuts. Like, dignity had long, long gone out of the window, assuming the windows were open, for the hair that we were all growing over 4 months. But here, a simple short back and sides for Andre is treated like death itself. That's how you do it. Pro wrestling is anything you can make it want to be. And they did it here. They really did.
It's just so simple, isn't it? Just like you say, just a change of look and that's it. He's ready to be he's ready to be a heel, isn't he? We don't know that. We didn't know that quite at that moment, but now with the benefit of hindsight, we know what direction they were going in.
Yes. For more on this, I would check out the edition of Greetings from Allentown with our friend Peter Winson, who talks about this angle in very, very close and painstaking detail. I don't know the episode number, but you should all subscribe to it anyway, because it is great.
It is.
So that's the end of the tape. The end of the tape. A couple of points I've noted are four, in fact, as the credits roll. Number one, associate producer Craig Leathers of Titan Sports. There's a name to conjure with. He would appear on credits elsewhere a few years later. Two, I like this one, special thanks to Vince McMahon.
Thanks, Vince.
Put that one in there, I wonder. Three, showing that he really was a master of all trades, not a jack, a master of all trades. Research Howard Finkel, Titan Sports.
First ever employee of Titan Sports, wasn't he?
Was indeed. Rest in peace, man. And number Absolutely. Four, and for those of you who are sadly familiar with this tape, this one's for you. The credits are shown against stills ostensibly from the video, but it includes one we did not see as part of this, and that is only of Terry Effin Funk. Apparently, his debut WWF match versus Aldo Marino on Championship Wrestling from June 1985 was indeed part of the VHS release, but it didn't make it to the network. Having seen it elsewhere, I can only assume the issue stems from when Mel Phillips puts on Terry's cowboy hat and then gets utterly royally pasted for his trouble. Terry really does beat the merriest of hell out of him. It would have been the most villainous act on the tape, no doubt, beating Mel Phillips to a bloody pulp. But sadly, I can't include it in my reckoning. So towing the line, am I, with the WWE Network?
Hey.
That horrendous fucking pun. Only $9.99 a month. It could be the maybe it's other Mel Phillips things that it was cut from the network. But yes, not on the version we watched, so I can't include it in the review. But for completion's sake, and the fact I don't get to see the greatest pro wrestler of all time, I thought I had to mention it. But Ben, we're out. Down and out.
Oh, good Lord.
I was just starting to get almost good at the end. We had some normal things bringing us home.
Yeah, but it was like 20 minutes of good and then 50 minutes of absolute dreck.
Very much after a very bad Lord Mayor's show. But as is customary on these programs, we must do the awards, if that's the right word. So then this one's really going to tax you. What is our rewind? For Villains of the Squared Circle, our best, B-E-S-T, best match or segment.
Okay, so there's no match. I can quite categorically say that. I will go for best segment. I will go with the Heenan Family Albano Manager of the Year situation.
I thought you might. Any personal attachment to that one, maybe?
I just don't think very much of one of the people in there. and I really like one of the other people in it.
I did go for Bundy Hogan, an obvious choice, but what else did I have to really go for on this tape? It set up a WrestleMania main event.
Good pick.
And made a giant egg look like a legitimate challenger. And we just got a minute of it on the tape. That's all it was. And I suppose I could pick all of the Piper stuff, but there wasn't enough of it. I really want to test myself by picking the best and worst of Roddy Piper when I get to that tape. Speaking of worst, Ben, what would be your one fast forward moment, the worst match or segment?
Albano versus Monsoon.
I agree with you. Yeah.
There's an awful lot of rubbish on this tape, but that is like the worst of it.
There was some shite on here, as we like to say, on this side of the pond. But it was kept short or it was edited. There we had the whole thing from start to finish.
Of all the matches we could have had complete, this is the one they picked.
Stall. Although Kirshner versus Sheik ran it close. That was a complete
yes.
Match. Yeah, I'm with you. I hate giving Gorilla worse than anything, but it is what it is. And it was Captain Lou Albano. Your pause moment, the most striking visual of the tape.
I'm going to cheat a little bit because we didn't get that much of it, but I'd go for the Piper coconut attack.
Mm-hmm. That's a very solid pick.
It's iconic, and it's iconic for a reason.
It is. I went for Andre selling his haircut so freaking well.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Through shows like The Mothership and The Network, I'm having a newfound appreciation for Andre, you know.
Definitely.
I really am. I need to go back and watch more.
Mm.
If anybody has any specific Andre recommendations, do get in touch.
He only really popped. I mean, it's when you watch him a lot, he only really slows down like in about 89, isn't it? So 87 into 88, he's still really good. And then, you know, sadly, it is off a very steep cliff. But until then, yeah, he's absolutely superb.
Speaking of which, not what I'm trying to lead you, a new category that I wanted to debut last month, but considering it was Hulk Hogan Real American, not the fairest of fields. So who is our video star, our MVP of this tape?
Because I know you're trying to steer me, but I would go with Andre because he is inked about three or four of the matches on this tape, and he makes at least two of them passable, which on this tape is a win as far as I'm concerned.
Correct answer. And brings us to the greatest award of all, your final thoughts on this tape. So then, Ben, for the sake of completeness, I'm going to run through them all. Is this tape a buy, i.e. a must-see? Is it a rent? A might see. Is it a bargain bin? It's all, I'll get to it eventually if I have a bit of spare time. Or is it a wipe?
Okay, I'm gonna mold two categories together. It's a buy / wipe for me because it's a must see because you have to see it just to realise how terrible it is. We describing it can make it, you know, sound bad, but you have to go out. Either you have to go out your way to actually go watch it, and then never watch it ever again.
Yeah, this is one where
we can moan as much as we want in the modern day in 2020 about Dolph Ziggler being in main events, but until you've watched this tape, kids, you don't know bad wrestling.
This is one where we suffer. So you do have to, dear listener. Just check it out. Mercifully, it's fairly short. It's only 1 hour and 10 on the network with the Terry Funk match cut out. Yeah, still very much a hard wipe from me. The first one I've given on our fifth show. I hope it's not something I need to dish out too often over the course of the next 6.5 years. But this one is the gold standard of bad tapes. Thrown together, not enough Heenan. A bored Gene, and you can always tell when Gene's bored and he's not engaging with the material. This was one such occasion. And as we hinted at throughout the review, Ben, it didn't tell me anything about Villains of the Squared Circle.
Like I said earlier, it's a good idea, but the execution is all wrong, isn't it? You know,
he didn't get to I know it's 1986. I know their fields of reference are shorter at this point. I know it was made very quickly and on the hoof, but I was hoping this was going to be at least a little bit more exploratory.
Mm. You know, even if you keep the same runtime, you could do sort of 20 minutes of the Heenan family. You could do 5-10 minutes of Piper, 5-10 minutes of Savage, 5 minutes of, you know, Sheik and Volkov. And that'd be the majority of your tape, right? That, you know, even with, sorry, I didn't mention Jake either. But the whole like 1970s bit took me out of it. Watching it, and then it took that end segment to even just bring me back even slightly.
not enough Heenan family, not enough Jake, definitely not enough Savage makes this one a big old wipe, I'm afraid, everybody.
Yeah.
But Ben, we did get there. And
we did.
Not. I've been listening closely. It doesn't sound like you're sharpening knives.
I will forgive you, but you owe me big.
Battle Bowl 93 might not be enough to cover my debt to you after this one.
To be fair with Battle Bowl 93, that is our Scottish colleagues pay-per-view of choice. Yeah.
But Ben, thanks very much for joining me for this one. I couldn't do it alone.
He really couldn't.
And why don't you tell everybody on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network what you've got going on, including with our friend there, the aforementioned Mr. McDougall.
Okay, so as Rory's just very kindly led me in, we are, I would say we're sort of in between episodes of Special Relations at the moment, aren't we? That's a nice way of putting it.
Well,
I don't know exactly when this episode would come out, but our episode number 10 is coming up very soon. And as we'll be out in the middle of August, we are going to be doing a SummerSlam themed expert. We have a special guest on tap. I won't be saying who that is, but he is the specialist of special guests, would you say, Rory?
Yeah, he might have been mentioned in the last hour as well.
as well as that, episode number 3 of the Chicken Salad will be out by the time you've heard this. SummerSlam 1993 was the show that we reviewed. It's not terrible. I didn't think it was terrible at the time. I don't think it's terrible in 2020. I don't know why Logan picked it, but I was actually quite glad, because, like I say, it was an all right watch.
Especially as now you know what terrible really is.
Exactly. As for the episode itself, it does contain possibly the greatest impression in Place to Be Nation history. That's all I'm going with at the moment. But when you hear it, even for wrestling fans, it's very meta. So it's a really fun episode. It's probably the best one we've done. I know we've only done 3. It's a very small sample size, but best one we've done. Impact Zone is still going on. That's Logan and Jacob. I'm there on every other episode. So the one that's out at the moment will be not one of mine, but it's with Sean and Lewis reviewing pay-per-view number 101. And I want to say it's Impact number 4. But yeah, it's a really good listen. We don't try and sugarcoat TNA at all by saying it's the best. It's a bit like this, you know. If something's terrible, guess what? We're going to tell you. I've also done a couple of things on the Pop feed. I was very lucky to be on Laughing Theatre with Andy Atherton, where we watched Old School. And I've also done a piece of the action with Matt Souza, where we watched Speed. Both films hold up greatly, which I'm very pleased to say. And so, yeah, that's all the shows. You can reach me on Twitter at BenL1981. The Special Relations have their own Twitter feed. That is at PTBNSpecialRel1. I hope I've got that right.
That's the boy.
I set it up, and I'm the one who can't remember it. That's quite worrying. And that's me done. I think that's everything.
Are you sure that's everything, Ben?
Well, I've done a bit of a Sean Kidd this last month and sort of perennially guest starred on anything that anybody will have me on.
A finger in every pie, I think.
Something like that.
Yes, Special Relations, do watch out for episode 10. Episode 10 already. God,
Where does
it go? Probably dropping. Well, we know the date. That one's dropping on the 22nd of August. We've already been told it's going to be then. Not going to step out of line on that one.
That's why I said it was in between episodes. So we're not quite. I'm not quite sure when this will be out. But obviously, episode 9 was the wedding episode. Is married life treating you well, my friend?
It is. I made sure to watch Villains of the Squared Circle Far From Her Gaze. Even at this early stage, I want to watch my step. I don't want any comebacks. Let's say that then. Oh, yeah.
Rory is still happily married, or so she says.
Well, we're going away to Stratford next weekend as we record this for our month anniversary. Going to Shakespeare's birthplace as well.
Very nice.
Very nice indeed. Booked this very day, so just got to keep a sweep for 7 more days. And she won't even hear when I edit this show. I don't want her to hear Villains of the Squirt Circle exists. And that I've spent 70 minutes of my married life watching it and a further 70 talking about it.
Yeah, I'll be like,
I've got my priorities in life right.
2.5 hours you are never getting back, my friend.
just think how else I could be spending those two. Oh, no, that's just, okay, that's too much information.
Yeah.
Yes, Married Life treats me very well. Thank you, Ben. We're very happy in it.
So, yeah, so that was the last episode. The future episode is going to be out on the 22nd, and, yeah, it's going to be great.
Of course it will be. With the preparation we do for our shows. For
Preparing to fail and all that, or failure to prepare.
Yes, indeed. You can hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, just search Wrestling 20 Years Ago. By the time this show goes out, all the shows for July 2000 will be available. ECW, WWF, and WCW. I am on the WCW show, where I talk about Vince Russo and Bash at the Beach 2000 for far too long. So if you want to really hear angry Rory, I thought I was oddly restrained during this one. I think I used up all my anger on Vince Russo, but who can blame me? But the WWF show, Fully Loaded 2000, one of the most fun times I've ever had recording a podcast. Present company, not included, obviously, Ben. But we're talking about all the great Raw and SmackDown stuff, that tremendous pay-per-view, Triple H training Trish, all that fantastic stuff. And you can just tell the enjoyment. I listened back to it just now, pouring through the speakers. One of the favourite shows I've had be involved with in the 5 years I've been doing podcasts. So if you do check out just one, especially if you're new to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, do check out that one, our WWF show. It was a blast to record it, and I hope it is for you to hear it. Best way to get in touch with me probably is the Special Relations Twitter. Again, it's PTBN Special Rel 1. Any recommendations for videos you want to watch, if you want to argue with us at our feelings on the Villains of the Squared Circle, we'll give you fair rope to hang yourself with.
We'll give them like a minute of our time, I think.
I'm hoping for full-scale agreement on this one, really. No accounting for taste and all that, but thank you very much for listening to this and the excellent feedback that I have personally received over the 4 shows and now 5 shows we've done so far. And I've got so much material to look at. If this keeps being churned out once a month, like I said earlier, 6.5 years you will have me on going through all the Coliseum videos. But if you do have any specific recommendations for things that aren't on the network and want to point me in the right direction of where they are, please get in touch. If you want to be on a show, let me know as well, and we will see what we can do for you. But Ben, again, a very special thank you for joining me on this. Oh, I should ask, yes, like I said at the top of the show, Ben, how are you now?
Yeah, we're all right. We're still friends. Don't worry.
I did really have to check. Ben, cheers, mate. Always a pleasure.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, mate.
I will have you on something good on seeing your video in the future again, I promise.
It was his pick, everybody. Can I just...
It was very much.
I'm going to reiterate that again. It was Rory's pick.
Pour the blame on me, everybody. In every sense, nobody to blame but myself. But again, thanks very much for listening. And Villains of the Squared Circle, oh, I very much have seen your video. I'll catch you all next time.